Well, I like to bring in a kind of a deep, sexy, raspy voice to the team room. Oh, yeah, brother.
It's turning into the quiet storm over here. Welcome to the quiet storm.
The quiet storm.
You don't get that reference now? Okay, Ty.
Anyway, welcome back to the team room. We appreciate you joining us. Thanks for lending us your ears. And today we want to talk about things that are overused and overplayed, i.e. mainly the word leadership. Leadership is often overused and it is thrown out all over the place. You know, there's tons of books, tons of podcasts, tons of speakers that go around speaking on it, which is fine because it's highly needed. There is definitely, like, all those things wouldn't exist if there was not a lack of that need in the workplace, in the military, just in life in general. But the, you know, it's kind of like therapy words where people overuse therapy words. You know, I'm triggered or I'm whatever, safe space. It's leadership is the same way. People use or overuse leadership way, way too much. And once you start to overuse something, it actually ends up meaning nothing. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And I was telling, like I said earlier, I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't sleep sometimes. And so then I just write things down in a note and then hope to talk about it. So that's kind of what I wanted to throw to you. And I bet, I'd be willing to bet that Trent has some hot takes on this. So we may have to reshoot this one later on. But what do you got?
I'm just going to have Trent do a reaction video so he can watch this. And then he'll just pause and he'll just talk through it. Yeah, leadership is like a lot of stuff. There's semantic overload, right? Where a word takes on meanings that, you know, it may not be in the dictionary or it may have evolved over time, or suddenly you're like, this word doesn't mean that anymore, or how it is that we use it. Leader is one of those books, one of those topics that it has so many things written on it. You know, leaders eat last. All of the you know, David Goggins stuff is about leadership, extreme ownership from Jocko. All these people have figured it out. You're right. There wouldn't be a market for it if there wasn't a need for that sort of information, but it gives everybody the sense that at all times in your life, you're going to lead. You're going to lead in every single thing that you do. At least in our context, when, you know, it takes a while to become a leader in your organization. Once you make it there, you know, whatever that word means, once you get to a position of authority, you're still given evaluations every day. People are still evaluating you every single day coming into work. You have a way larger scope of responsibility. The decisions you make are way more, but it even takes you growing into that role. Somebody is evaluating you as a leader to get better and to grow. And some people still, like, don't progress past a certain level for a number of different reasons. So, like, when we say leader, like, that's who we're talking about. You're not always going to be a leader in our organization. And, you know, sometimes some of the best folks are the people that are right on the precipice for whatever reason, right? Somebody outranks them on the team and they get to be the number two. Let me tell you, being the number two is awesome. And if you're a really good, supportive, you know, number two man to, you know, your organizational leader, it makes things a lot easier, like a whole lot easier. You know, I'm reminded of, you know, old K-Dub when he was the DO and I was his ops suit. Man, it was a joy to come into work, but I didn't have to be the leader. I didn't have to be that guy. K-Dub was that dude. And I could fill the other lanes of, you know, support to the commander, support to the acting commander, whatever. And man, it was good times. But and it was because I wasn't the leader in that scenario. I was the muscle, so to speak.
it's being the hype man too.
I love being the hype man. I got to be like his angry interpreter. Like the scene with Obama where the anger interpreter. That was exactly my job. Yeah.
Oh,
you've seen his birth certificate. You know he was born in America. No, I love that sketch. Shout out Key and Peele. Key and Peele got rich off doing Dave Chappelle's show when Dave Chappelle went away. But anyway, not the point. But I got to be his anger interpreter. I got to be, you know, that dude that just kind of would go do stuff. I had a wide scope of practice, so to speak. So K-Dub let me handle enlisted business and let me handle that. And man, it was good, but that's a great example of, and I just knew what role I had to play. And that role was, you know, hype man and support dude. And I was happy to do that. That was one of the better times in my career.
Right. But that it also, because there's aspects of what you talked about, like the different kind of leadership role that K-Dub had and then a different leadership role that you had. Yeah. Okay. You were the number two hype man, but at the same time, within the enlisted space or within, like, you already had some, not necessarily because your position, I mean, that obviously has something to do with it as well, but your own personality, your own credibility in terms of, okay, you as a senior PJ, just not because you're of your rank, but like, dude, you've been a PJ for a long time. You inherently have credibility and leadership qualities because people go, and dude, I'm going to oversimplify this, but let's say, hey, I just need you to, you know, tie up a 3-to-1, right? Like, you've done it thousands upon thousands of times. Of course, you're going to be a leadership in that space. You start asking me to do anything, or maybe you used to ask me to do JTAC stuff, and I knew what the hell I was doing. Maybe now I'm not, but like, I already have, I've done thousands of nine lines. So yeah, okay, I know how to do that. I have a natural tendency to lead in that aspect, but it had nothing to do with my position, nothing to do with my rank. It's just, you just have that inherent credibility. It's like, and that goes across the board with a whole bunch of different people and the different aspects of it. They could be the lowest ranking person on the team, but if there's a problem set that they happen to excel at, because maybe before they came in, they were in that field or they went to school for that, like, they're going to be a natural leader in that aspect of that particular thing.
Yeah. You're going to want to step up and engage, you know, if you feel like that's your home run area, of course you're going to want to go, like, hey, I'm a subject matter enthusiast, as we like to say, in this, you know, arena. I'm going to jump in here and, you know, I have input, like, of course, like, because you feel like you're most at home there, obviously. And that comfort level is huge. And it's funny, the things that, you know, kind of young leaders try to do is they have this sense of leadership, that I always love, you know, and it comes a lot from the, you know, the questions about being a stow or being a crow. And they're like, well, I don't want to go to an admin role too early. And, you know, how many deployments am I going to have? Like, all of these things kind of like fit into the /leadership question. But they have this idea where they're going to, you know, get in and become a stow, and, you know, they're going to be a crusty major, like, running, you know, tactical missions, but like, man, you know, been 8 years on the teams, I'm a major now, I shouldn't have to run, you know, like, hey bro, that's, you know, that's not going to be the move there. But it would be funny if they looked at the leadership in really high ranking teams, like teams that are very stable. I'm talking about, you know, some of the more special teams that we have out there. You get there and you can be there for 15 deployments over 20 years and really never leave. Well, man, I'll tell you from experience, there's a lot of E9s in that room. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you look around, you're like, sergeant major, sergeant major, sergeant major, sergeant major, sergeant major. I like, yeah. So, but it's odd, like, all of those people are essentially equal. They have a positional authority of their troop chiefs and, you know, the squadron chief and all those dudes, squadron sergeant major.
Well, yeah. And they're professional enough to go, like, all right, dude, you're the same rank. Hey man, I'm game for following.
Right.
Following is just as important as somebody to take lead. Like, okay, it's really bad if you just have a room full of followers and nobody to take charge. Yeah, that's really bad. But if you, in the same token, if you have a room full of leaders and nobody's willing to actually muck in and get their hands dirty, then, like, you're exactly where you kind of left off with all the followers.
Right.
You have to have people in both. And even then, that's probably oversimplifying it in terms of, okay, you have somebody who's in charge or somebody who's leading and then somebody who's following. Like, there's tiers within that. And that's why the military task organization is kind of the way it's set up. It works.
Well, if those immature leaders would emulate those mature leaders in that aspect, it solves like a whole bunch of book idea. You know what I mean? Like, a whole bunch of authors go out. You know, when you start looking at how those folks interact, there's reasoning behind that. People think that conflict resolution at work has to look like, oh, I come from my place of positional authority and I give you a chance to apologize and then we go our merry way and blah, blah, blah. Like, there doesn't have to be any of that. On those high performing teams, you know, the people that are serving the leader, usually, like, if there's something wrong, it's not like they call them out. Even if their subordinate does something wrong, they usually just walk up and go, hey, man, you did A, you should have done B here. Can you do better next time? You're like, yeah, man, my bad. Like, half the time that dude was already thinking about it. He's like, hey, I know I fucked that one up, man. And you're just like, all right, got it. Let's not overtalk it. But, you know, it does, conflict resolution, you know, can be super, super easy because it can just be a bunch of professionals. And like, there's definitely levels, you know, to the game of, you know, just talking about that E9 sergeant major dude who's got, I don't know, 10 or 15 deployments. He's got a new team sergeant. He's like, okay, yeah, roger that. I'm on my way out. You're a younger dude. Great. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to be the best radio guy you've ever got. You know what I mean? Like, that's what actual dudes that lead well in organizations that lead well, that's how you can tell. And younger organizations tend not to do that. Like, that's why you have like very rigid structures in some organizations. Just because they're not there yet.
Yeah. Well, and we've also gotten in a habit of because we want everything to be perfect or we want everything done right, that it's just like, well, I'm just going to do it myself, or I'm just going to leave it to that person because I'll know that it'll get done exactly right, instead of, you know, allowing some of the younger dudes to do things and allow them to fail, allow them to mess up. As long as it's not catastrophic and somebody's going to die or something like that, then we have to allow them to, because the first time that they're actually in there doing it, where the stakes are really, really high, we don't want that to be their very first time. And then it mess up. We want to gradually train them and build that bench and make sure that, one, they're comfortable failing, or that if they do fail, it's not a complete shutdown and now they can't go, it's I failed, a fail fast thing, and then moving on, or okay, cool, we'll debrief that, like,
right,
whatever, we're fine.
Yeah,
keep going towards the objective, keep finishing and completing the mission, and then we'll figure it out once we get back.
Yeah, it does open up from the other side too, and I was thinking about it while you were talking. There's a fine line between the leaders in these organizations, and we're talking about leadership. This is more just a leadership ism that I've always hated. There's always a fine line between letting the young guys do it and then being that old guy that never does anything and just talk shit. Like, I hate that guy as well. Like, oh, you got to get the young bucks, get some hacks in, be like, what was the last time you did this? Can you still do this? Like,
yeah, there.
You can have one or the other, man. You can either be current and have an opinion, or you can shut the fuck up. Like, if you're not, then that is what it is. Like, we all have our roles to play. But I always love that dude. Be like, oh, no, let the young dudes get it in. And I've done it both ways. A funny thing, because it was totally fine. There was a pretty serious range incident, and it was just team training. It was an explosion happened. Somebody's hand was next to the explosion. And Jared and I, my friend Jared, two senior PJs on the, you know, on the team, not primary medics that day, just happened to be standing next to the guy. Jared and I immediately start treating. The young medic like pokes his head and he's like, oh, hey, I'm here to help. We're like, get out of here, nerd. You can't do that either. You know what I mean? That should have been one of those times. We figured it out shortly after we face mushed him. Jared was like, kind of like, hey, we should probably let Adam do this. And I was like, yeah, you know, you're probably right. Let's go ahead and step back. Hey, Adam. Yeah, come over here, man. Sorry about that. But anyway, person in question was fine.
No, I had something very similar when me and Sean Harvell were wrestling around, and he had a knife on his hip. Like, and it was one of those, I won't say the name because I don't want to end up getting sued somehow, but it was a high-end knife company, and they ended up having a recall on that knife because basically if you held the, it was a, you know, flip out knife. But if you held the knife like this, the casing, it would just swivel down because it needed the screw right here needed to be tightened. So it would just kind of do like that. Well, he had it on his hip and I didn't know that. And I'm wrestling him from behind and I freaking grab him and I throw him onto some A3 bags. And I feel a really, really bad Charlie horse on my thigh. And I'm like, fuck, that's weird. Like, what? You know, and I'm feeling A3 bag going, what the hell did I freaking fall on? And I just happen to look up and I can see the knife on his edge and it's sticking out. And I'm like, oh no. And this is BDU. So with BDUs and blood, it just goes black. It doesn't go, you know, it's not red or anything like that. Not, yeah, that I'm not telling you, I know up, you know that, but like the BDUs go black. And then I look down into my leg and my leg's just black and it's just growing. I'm like, Sean, dude, you stabbed me. He's like, yeah, shut the fuck up, dude. I'd stab you. I'm like, no, dude, look. And I just pull my pants down and it's just.
Oh, my God.
So obviously this is 321st. So we've got a bunch of PJs. And
those dirt magicians, those magic dirty boys. That's what they call us at STs, is they call us dirt magicians.
They do call you guys dirt magicians. It's something that I've used a lot.
And we're little Care Bears
on this podcast.
We're little Care Bears. You know why? Because you guys are so gung-ho and we're all so like, hey, bro, we balance each other out.
My goodness. Yeah. And so just like you were talking about in terms of we had brand new PJs. They had been on the team for a couple months, and then we had two seniors. So two senior PJs were actually arguing about who is going to get the treat. Me, as I'm just sitting there bleeding. And then finally, Chris Trisco actually pushes them out of the way. He's like, how about somebody fucking plug the wound? It just puts gauze on there. While the two, like right in between the two senior PJs, like how about let's just plug the wound and then let's talk about who's going to treat him. So it was pretty funny, but a couple of the new PJs got some live tissue out of me. So it was good. But,
you grew up thinking you want to be the team leader your whole life. When really, when you finally get to be a team leader, all you want to do is be a team member. You're like, hey man, let me be your element leader this time. Yeah. Are you an upgrade? Are you going to, go. No, good. Yeah. I'm your PJ too. Let's go.
Yeah, but it, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's, you know, you can, the military and people that are focused on duty titles and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They say, well, I'm the flight chief or I'm the commander or I'm the whatever. Okay. So with that, there are certain authorities that you are authorities and roles that you're expected to have, but it doesn't mean that you're just the natural leader in that. You could be the flight chief. You could be the team chief, but guess what? The dude, the tech sergeant or the staff sergeant that happens to just have that kind of personality, just he's incredible. That's the dude that might be really leading the team, or he may not be in charge. But I tell you what, those dudes on the team will do anything that guy says because he's got credibility, he's personable, and he's just a natural leader. It doesn't matter if he's a section chief or a NCOIC. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I know I'm using a bunch of acronyms. My bad.
No, that's great. Somebody hit us up. Not
commission officer in charge.
Somebody hit us up on one of the ATA episodes. It was like, oh man, I wish I had some sort of key to figure out all of the acronyms you guys use in this one. We're like,
it is bad. Like you start finding yourself just, oh man, I really did use that entire sentence in acronyms.
Yeah. Every time you say an acronym, I just find myself explaining what the acronym is. So now it's been a clue to me. I just say in plain English. It's a lot.
The worst part is when you're like, wait a minute, what is that acronym?
We're all guilty of it at some point. And you even get caught like using an acronym. You don't know. It can never be me, but I've seen people get caught just, what does that mean? And the guy's like, oh, it means this. And everybody's like, that's not what that means.
No,
that is not what that means at all. Yeah. But, or like the phonetic, you know, spelling or saying of what they think the acronym is. Hilarious. it's always a good one. Like, you think that's what? No. Those are some challenges I always see from, you know, we started talking about kind of like the semantic overload of, you know, what is being a leader and how does that look? And will you always be the leader and stuff? And dispelled some rumors there. We had some isms of the leadership thing. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, like leadership wise?
I think probably some of the characteristics that we see, and again, it's not just of the folks that are in that leadership position, but the quote unquote leaders. And I know I said that we both said that it's an overused term, and yet we're using the hell out of it in this, right. You know, so I don't know
what to generalize the shit out of it.
Exactly. So I don't know a better word to use right now, but I think some of the characteristics of what at least I see as somebody who is what I would consider a good leader. So you're honest, transparent, hold others accountable, hold yourself more importantly accountable, because I should be holding myself more accountable than I do anybody else in my eyes. Because if I don't hold myself accountable for things that I either do well or mess up or get wrong, then what business do I have going to you or going to somebody else and saying, you jack these things up and now I'm going to hold you accountable? Like that's messed up in my eyes.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's a, you know, transparency for a leader, both good and bad. Like you're going to screw up as a leader. Like the guys that'll just stand up and go, hey, really screwed this one up. I'm trying to fix it going forward. You know, here's what I think I learned, you know, let's, you know, go forward. I mean, everybody's going to have those days, and have a leader pretend like they've never done anything like that. Or people have a tendency to get a little bit too preachy as a leader. I say the same thing for law enforcement. Like if law enforcement is ever giving me a citation for anything, you know, they're like, hey, you really should, you know, be careful on this drive. And some cop gave me a like 10-minute lecture on texting and driving.
Wow.
And I was like, I wasn't, you pulled me over for speeding. Like you didn't pull me over because I was driving reckless and like looking at my phone, because I was going 15 over on this one little road. So, but like for like 10 minutes, she was like, oh yeah, you know, deaths are up way this year, so you can't be texting and driving. And I was like, okay. And then she was like, continue with this. Like, listen, at this point, it's a transaction. You know, you're giving me a ticket. I have to pay the state now. Okay. Just make it efficient. Don't talk to me.
That's weird that she went into a texting while driving rant while you were just speeding.
I don't know. It was so weird about it afterwards that I was just like, oh, maybe she needed to do that day.
Yeah. That is weird.
Who knows?
Anyway. No, the transparency thing though is there is a fine line. I have been absolutely guilty of being too transparent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's a weird thing, and I'm sure you recognize that when I first showed up to the 2-2, like I had chief on for a month. That's it, mm-hmm. right? But the folks in the 2-2 had no idea. They just assumed, hey, he's showed up and he's got that extra rank on, that extra stripe, and he knows like all these things, which is not the case at all. Oh, he knows how to do manning. He knows how to do assignments. He knows how to do EPRs or EPBs and all that kind of stuff. Like, no, I don't.
Nah, dog. Like, joke's on you, my guy.
Yeah. So, well, you're the chief. I'm like, yeah, I've had it on for a month, and yeah. I didn't come from another unit. I came from a SOCOM headquarters. Like, wait, I didn't do that stuff there. Like,
I had one EPB to do, and it was my own. My boss. That was
it. So, you know, transparency like that is good, but at the same time, it can be bad, because if you kind of let the cat out of the bag about, you know, things that are going on within the command or things that are going on within whatever, then you can then create turmoil that you don't need to create. Sorry, try not to cough, people.
you're getting there. You're going to be better. Yeah, there's nuance to all this stuff too. And that's what, you know, most of your, if not all of your time thinking about, you know, your own personal leadership styles, like thinking about all of these things and all these places where you could have fallen short or, you know, whatever else. I'm trying to find answers to all these great leadership riddles. You know, 'cause there's good and bad parts to both of it. Like the guys that take another kind of like trait that we look for is, you know, somebody that can, you know, easily wield their authority. Like I like a predictable dude. Like if I screw up with a commander, there is actually like comfort that I get knowing like, hey, here's how he's going to react. Here's what he's going to say. You know, here's what I need to be prepared for. That actually makes you a lot more comfortable than never knowing what your leader is going to do. You know, unpredictable, or maybe doesn't do so well in planning or whatever. But, you know, there's nothing more chaotic than working for a leader where you're like, oh man, well, one of the guys, you know, didn't see a curb and, you know, hit it with a truck, you know, hit the curb with the truck. And now we have to replace something on a vehicle. Well, I've walked into commander's rooms and just been like, are you going to scream at me? Are you just going to be like, okay, cool, tight? 'Cause you know, you both ends of that spectrum, but that's a wacky place to live. So a good quality of a leader is, for me, is predictability, consistency, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. You can be heavy handed. You could be kind of more dictator-ish. I don't have problem working for those types of dudes, because usually that their rules are very clear. And once you figure out what it is that you do for them, then usually you can have as much freedom as you want. You just got to figure out what it is that they're, you know, what left and rights they want you to follow. And when you have that figured out, then you go forth and do.
No, you're 100% right. Having somebody that has an even keel and is going to react exactly how you know they are. So again, the nice, calm, cool, collected is my preferred. But if you're going to be a fly off the handle kind of person, then make it fly off the handle every single time, regardless of how bad it is. Because at least I know what I'm getting when I come in, instead of the unknown, like, who are we getting today? You know?
Right. Like, oh, yeah. I'm telling you, it's the craziest thing. And I've walked out of the you know, I had a conversation with a guy that was on team with, but we're walking away from one of those, you know, talks with the commander where you have to like own up to some big boy rules sort of shit. And we walked out and the commander was just fine with it. Like, we told him, like, yeah, you know, this vehicle got parked a little bit too close. Helicopters make dust. We need a new windshield. And he just kind of like looked at us and he was like, okay, yeah. You know, it's training. It was the medical van. Okay. Yeah. No, it's training. So yeah, that stuff happens. Nope. No problem. Just go let vehicles know. I was like, this is it. This is my, he's going to charge me for this. Like, I'm going to have to replace the window. I'm going to get in trouble, like formal counseling. And he was just like, no, you're fine. Yeah. Helicopters do that, man. That sucks. Anyway, have a good one. Like, all right. Just walk. Okay. I was like, right. I don't know. But you know, the same guy had freaked out about something super small, you know, not that long ago. We're like, you care about this? Like, this is the thing that makes you this mad? Okay. Tight. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, just chaotic. And it's hard for, you know, leaders to have that consistency, because, you know, sometimes you just get hit with stuff that you're just like, what in the world is happening? Yeah. Like, you didn't even know you could have problems the size of the problems you have, the further up you go.
Yeah. And you know, you do your best to have a consistent reaction to something every single day. But I mean, sometimes you just, man, you had a bad night's sleep, or you just got a crappy workout in that morning, or you're just, you know, having a fight with your significant other, or, you know, like, you're not going to be perfect every single day, but it's trying your best to be consistent is what I would say. Cause I am definitely not, I don't have the best day every single day. That is for sure. And then sometimes you hear something, or you hear that somebody did something, and you're like, what? What?
You did what now? I love the times that I hear about it and it's so crazy that I'm like, that can't be true. And somebody's like, no, we're not screwing with you. This is actually a true thing. You're like, wow, well, I'm impressed at least. You know, there were times where I had never, it's kind of like the joke about free fall school. Is, you know, the students, once they put on that little yellow or orange jumpsuit, whatever they are now, they're just completely they're impervious to pain. They can just do that. You'll see a student just do a downwind landing at like 200 miles an hour, like roll 12 times. You're like, oh my God, are you okay? They'll just stand up and they're fine. It's that yellow suit of invincibility. Be like, you landed on a cactus, bro. And they're just out jumping again. No big deal. I actually did that in another tangent. I actually did that in free fall school. So I was on short final, I think probably like fifth or sixth jump out at Yuma, and I'm coming in and I never saw, but there was a dust devil that I went right over top, and it just absolutely collapsed my chute at like 200 feet. So then I look up, like I hit a toggle strike, my chute inflates, like I hit the ground, you know, pretty hard, but my chute inflated just enough to get a little bit of lift before I hit the ground. So over flies the medic, who was the PJ, his name was Chris. I'll spare his last name, but Chris comes flying over, and this guy's like a master sergeant, you know, pretty well known in the community, like a free fall school instructor at the time. And I'm just kind of like dusting myself off and putting stuff away. He's like, bro, are you okay? And I saw the look on his face and I was like, should I not be okay?
Yeah.
They couldn't see because I was in like a slight ravine where I landed. But basically from their vantage point, it just looked like I cratered into the earth. So he came over, just expected me to just be absolutely screwed up. And I was just like, no, I'm okay. Then a second guy flew up on a on an ATV. He was like, is this guy okay? I was like, I'm right here. I can talk to you. Yeah, but
it's a miracle.
It is. That's a miracle. But yeah, the yellow suit of invincibility and being a student. I can't remember what it got us on that tangent for me to tell that story.
I don't remember either, but
that something is about leadership. I don't know. We were talking about traits of a leader. Maybe
yellow suits of invincibility. Yellow silks.
Yeah, I took us way off of whatever it is that we were talking about there. We'll have to go back in the comments and look.
Because you know what will get you back is, one, Cardomax will get you back.
Shut
Cardomax
up.
With all that caffeine, brother. It will.
Cardomax fueled my entire operation. I had to clean everything up. I'm having some friends come into town and stay for a couple days, and I had to clean everything yesterday. So it was just one of those days where you throw on a podcast, you eat the fact that for the entire afternoon you were going to be cleaning bathrooms and mopping floors and, you know, cleaning things that you aren't used to cleaning. But there by my side the entire time was Cardomax. If you download two of those packets, two is the dose for me. When I wake up and I'm getting ready to like go work out,
I hit two?
Dude, it's great. Listen, my tolerance for caffeine is pretty high, but that's the only caffeine I take is in the morning and part of my morning routine. Two of those little Cardomax bad boys is not medical advice. Use as directed for yourself. But for legal reasons, use as directed. But man, I put a couple of those bad boys down and go on. Man, that's my whole morning, and it's fantastic. I love the blue raspberry, favorite one, Cardomax. Our code over there is One's Ready Still, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, One's Ready. Go to Cardomax. Get some of that rehydration stuff, too. The Wave Crusher rehydration, that's my go-to at night. I drink that around dinner to get myself hydrated. It's a good one.
That's right. And we got somebody new coming on right now in terms of and we've talked about these guys before. We've had Prime and Don on before, but Deep End Fitness, Las Vegas. The episode hasn't aired yet, but we've had Maki Pitolo on, who's a professional MMA fighter and then also runs Deep End Fitness, Las Vegas. And he has wanted to extend kind of an invite to folks out there that are in the Las Vegas area, or if you happen to be visiting Las Vegas. So Deep End Fitness, if you're not tracking, that's what ESPN is showing in terms of, you know, the underwater torpedo league where they're basically wrestling and trying to drown each other underwater. That is not the entire pool sessions. Okay. Like that's not what it's all about. That's just having fun.
That's all you're doing.
You know, I mean, not everybody wants to drown, but,
right.
But it happens sometimes. You never know. Anyway, sorry about that. Try not to cough in everybody's ear. Anyway, it's all practice of movement under the water, breath work, and strengthening your mind and your body in order to optimize human performance, both in and out of the water. So some of the things that it'll do, or their pool sessions will do, is help develop critical thinking and problem solving in kind of a controlled environment. So when you get that kind of spaz in terms of like, oh my God, overwhelming feeling, their breath work and their ability to work your mind and your body underwater will help focus and center you and be able to control your thoughts and your body in a chaos kind of environment. So it's going to teach you mental relaxation and mitigation techniques, and really just so not just with your body and your mind, but also it's just phenomenal workouts. I mean, that's what we did in the pipeline for 4 hours a day. Okay. Every single day.
Awful. Awful.
It was awful, but these pool sessions are not awful. You're not getting smoked by Cadre every single day, right? You got Maki and his team that are actually providing coaching to you. So use the promo code ONE, that's ONE, and that'll get you $50 off for a monthly pass at the Las Vegas Deep End Fitness. So make sure you go check those guys out. Great crew over there. And like I said, I'm looking forward to jumping in on some of those, and I will beat you to the punch before you move to Vegas.
Okay. You're on the clock, big guy.
Yeah, I know.
You are on the clock, my dude. Now, Maki was great to have on the podcast. You know, as always, we're bad at production and turning episodes around, so we don't know when this is going to release in relation to Maki's episode. But, you know, his story was amazing. It was one of those crazy things. And we kind of talked to him, and it's funny that as we were talking about Deep End Fitness, go check them out in Las Vegas. But, you know, I was thinking about like how we asked Maki how he made that step. You know, his story is kind of, he was a kickboxer. I mean, he played football in high school and then found kickboxing and found a love for kickboxing and ended up doing that. And then eventually bridged into, you know, grappling and MMA and had a pretty young pro career fighting out of Hawaii. And we asked him, you know, he was 18 or 19 for his first fight. We're like, how did you make that leap? And he was like, you know, I just trusted my team around me. My team said I was ready and I just went. That's one of those things too, is the transition to being into these roles that we consider as a leader. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, you have no clue. Like when I put on E7, they're like, oh, well, you know, you're a master sergeant now and, you know, senior NCO is a different game and we're going to need you to do all this other stuff. I had no idea. Nobody gave me a book. You know, it's funny. Like when you said, the magic of being a chief, like people are like, oh, you just magically know how to do manning now. And you understand how different pots of money work. And you can explain, you know, through lines for PGL and all this other stuff that we need to think about. That's not even mission stuff. That's not also all, you know, you have guys in 10 different locations doing 15 different things. You're like, man, where is that guy? Where is he going? What am I doing now? Right. Yeah.
It's like every time you hop in the country and there's a new acronym and people are like, and you don't know what it is. You don't know what that is.
You're like, I was just here. I was just here. Like there, it's been like that forever. No, it hasn't. It has not. I was here last year. I did that going, it was like a Bagram rotation. We deployed three times in 3 years and we went to Bastion and Bagram. So we were just down the road in Bastion. We go back to Bagram the next year. And I was like, hey, what you guys are calling this a completely different thing. And they were like, oh no, it's always been like that. I'm like, no, it has not. I was here 8 months ago. I was like, we deployed the exact same time last year, like the exact same time. Yep. We deployed, we came home, we trained up, we were there on timeline next year. I know it doesn't make any sense, but that's what we did. They're like, okay.
I remember when MAM, military age male, was the first time. Now, granted, that was a long time ago, but I remember we never used that. And then all of a sudden everybody's saying MAMs, MAMs, MAMs. Well, then it was this?
It's like words catch fire.
Yeah,
VIX, you know, vehicles are now VIX everywhere for everything that you always do. That came about during our stuff. We didn't even have, like, we were there passing, like, the first time I heard a slant, they were like, hey, give me your slant off target. And you're like, the slant out there, it's funny we were talking about acronyms. I think that might be an acronym.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, we won't say it. It's an acronym, but it just
It's described, an acronym, but I yeah. even then, I still can't.
I can't tell you what's
on the spot. I could look it up real fast, but on the spot right now, I just know. And that's the thing, folks, you know, like you don't have to say joint terminal attack controller.
Right.
You just say JTAC, slant, MAM. You just know what it is.
Yeah.
That's where you'll get. And it doesn't make sense now, but you'll get to a point where that you just know what it is. And then when you have to spell it out, you're like, oh shit. Especially as you're writing, like, you know, as you're writing an email or writing a paper on something and you're like, oh, yep. And let me spell it out. Cause I got to spell it out the very first time before I use the acronym. And then you're like, oh boy, I need to Google this.
Right. But that's the point, is these things, you're doing a lot of Googling. Like there's a term, like we say, we try to season leaders, but the only way that you can do that is by exposing them to new scenarios all the time, by making them write paper. You know, sometimes you're helping your career field refine tactics, techniques, and procedures, and you have to like rewrite everything about a certain task. And you're like, wow, I had no idea all of this training and all of this actual stuff went into the task that I have to study now, or, you know, describe in detail. But you don't know how to do that. Like you're going to have your first tactics rewrite. The first time that you go to that thing, you're going to be like, oh wow, I know nothing about my entire life. But then, you know, as you go back a second or a third time, you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you have to be exposed to that sort of stuff just to make sure you are growing as a leader. You don't need to know 100% of the things. Like, that's never the goal, is to be the guy on the mountain with all the knowledge. But you want to know enough to get them to the right people. You know, if you describe a problem to me, I should at least know, okay, well, you should talk to the chaplain, or maybe there's a resource for that, or maybe it's a training thing that we can do, or maybe you're having a professional issue that I have to be able to unpack and then try to give you advice on, or whatever. I don't have to be perfect.
Yep.
But
that's a great point.
You develop those skills over time, though. And some of those skills are failing. Like, people think you magically stop failing as you get into these leadership things. No, now you know enough to critique yourself and you're like, oh, fucking idiot. Like, I can't believe I did that. Or I can't believe I handled it this way. Or I didn't know anything about this program and I could have helped somebody out. Like, there's plenty of that going on.
Yeah, no, that's great. I missed that one when it came to the characteristics. Is you've got to be smart enough to know that you're not smart and know everything. And you got to leverage those folks around you or your network. That's why, you know, always be networking, right?
Right.
Because you never know when you're going to have a problem, a tactical problem, or something like that, tactical situation where you don't have the answer to. You have an idea, but you don't have the answer to. You know what? I know in my Rolodex of contacts, hey, this person is a F-16 SME. About, you know, now I need to know something about this. And then I ping them or whatever it is to get the right answer. It's not about knowing it. It's about knowing who to go to get that answer. And then acknowledging and fully admitting that you don't have the answer to everything.
Yeah.
Because it's part of that, you don't.
Yeah. It's part of that transparency too, you know, of like, hey, I'm not telling you that I know. I used to joke with K-Dub. I'd say that, you know, those are my two, my value proposition is I will work hard and I know a lot of people. Like, and I try to just be able to just reach out and just be like, I know a lot of people and I can fix things. You know what I mean? I always used to joke about that. I was like, I'll work hard. I was like, my only value proposition, I will work hard and I will know people.
But so, you know, and I know you know this, but that's what we, at least on the surface level, what a lot of the companies look for are people that are retiring, is they look for our contact list, right? And at least on the surface, for initial hiring, they are like, okay, well, this person is recently in the military. They have a current, you know, contact list. Now, granted, that expires every single day. It gets older and older. But so that gets you in the door with a lot of these companies. And then it's your work ethic and your know-how and your technical expertise that keeps you on. But that's what gets you in the door. And I'm telling you right now, you never know when you're going to need something from somebody. And I don't mean it to sound transactional or, oh, I'm only keeping in touch with these people because I need something for them. They may need something for you too. And it's like we're a community. Like, you know, Aaron, you're part of a massive, massive PJ text chain. Or
I don't know if it's
text chain or Slack channel. Like,
it's a Signal chat. It's huge.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, you know, there's SOTF, the Special Operations Transition Foundation. They've got a Slack channel that has all of their fellows on there that if somebody needs something, they can pipe up. That's what a lot of those, you know, combat control networks, the Gray Beret Association, the TACP Association, like, that's why they exist, to help out. And you got to utilize them sometimes, you know, even when you don't want to. Sometimes you don't want to use them, and one of your buddies will pull you over to the side and be like, "Look, dude, I got it. Your ego's playing into this, or you're too proud, or whatever it is. But like, allow us to help you."
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've seen somebody just put a request in there on the group, and it's from anything. It's, hey, I heard this guy said he's a PJ. Can we verify him? Can I get like a roster check, or, you know, whatever, some of the other, you know, sillier stuff. And Facebook memes still get shared back there. Don't worry about it. hilarious. But I don't know how many times somebody's just had some random thing be like, hey, is anybody, you know, does anybody know where I can go to pilot school, or I want to become a commercial pilot? How do I do that? You'll have 10 people that'll hit them up and be like, hey, I shot you a DM. I just did this. You know, people going to different areas, be like, hey, does anybody know about this area? Like 15 people hop in and are like, oh, here you go. I know this guy. I know that guy. Like, it is an amazing resource. Like every time I watch it happen, I'm just like, that's the reason this chat exists. But
exactly.
Yeah. But that's a good thing is that you don't, you know, you don't stop working, networking with those people and figuring out, because the more of a network you have, the more valuable, you know, you really are going to be, just again, because it becomes a extended network of folks and things you can provide.
Yeah. And that's why it's uncomfortable for people. A lot of people anyway, I know me, I'm a social butterfly. So it comes natural to me, but the, at events or something like that, where you got to go talk to a lot of people and it happens. And sometimes it's, what's weird is you can tell, I don't know, just because I've done it enough, you can tell when it's somebody who is purely transactional, like they just want to have your name because you know that one day they're going to reach out and just need something just because they want something. They don't actually want to provide anything, right, any value to you or your life. Right. They're just like, I want to have this dude in my number that, or in right, my phone, that way I can reach out to them. You can, you do it enough and you can tell, you're like, oh, no, okay. I know what you are. But
my most dreaded, my most dreaded days at the schoolhouse were the graduations. So we, there used to be four graduations a year, but then three graduations. Normally I would do the family brief, or I would do, you know, I started working a little bit with Bill Watson, and the Pararescue Association and stuff that they're working on. You know, PJ Foundation as well. Like, shout out to those cats, and those guys are doing great stuff. More foundations to put out there, but I'll tell you, those graduation days, so you'd have family that was there, you'd have mucky mucks from around base. Sometimes, depending on like if everybody gets a wild hair, you know, we used to pair graduations with stuff like SKT rewrites. So people would come down. SKT is specialty knowledge training. Is that SKT?
The skills knowledge? Yeah. Oh man, here we go.
I think specialty knowledge. Oh dude,
we're going to get so roasted. We should know what SKT is. I know what SKT is.
I know. Oh well, hey, young Jamie, Google that one. But yeah, so sometimes you would have like really high ranking career field dudes in. So like, if you were heavily engaged in this process, I would just talk about, you know, the schmoozing just drains my battery, because it was, you'd have to talk to, you know, maybe you're talking to your boss in the career field, maybe you're talking to a random 2-star general that just got wind that the PJs were graduating and they wanted to come. We've had Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Forces there. We've had, you know, General Welsh, you know, famously used to come down there. General Goldfein was rescued by PJ. So we'd had the Chief of Staff and the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force through like at the schoolhouse just on random Tuesdays because he got laid over. So our chief at the time, Robbie Bean, was on the team that saved Goldfein during his shoot down. And he used to come in frequently and chat with Chief Bean because Chief Bean was the last guy on the team that was still in. He was a commandant of the school. But it was like those graduation days, they'd be so draining for me by the time I got done. I'm just like, whatever. But that's where I like, or like when we've done shot before, that's another one where you're talking to people and just meeting people all day. And you can just feel it. They're just like, oh yeah, let me get your phone number.
I bet when you and Trent stayed in the hotel, you guys did not speak to each other at all. As soon as you came in the door, it's like your bed. Don't talk to me.
That's false. Joke's on you, my guy. The only thing we did was gossip about the people that we saw during the day. It was worse. And Trent starts asking me if aliens are real. And
by the way.
But, we're already, they are, 100%. Yeah.
So just the SKT is specialty knowledge test. So you had it right.
Test. No, I said training, not test. I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, terrible ends. I'm glad we came full circle on that one. It's always good to tie a through line.
Just to show everybody.
Like, yeah. Hey, 100%. I never promised I was great. You know what I mean?
Just because I can hit record and set up some very simple cameras here and lights, okay. And I still manage to mess that up.
I still manage to mess that up pretty
time
good.
Time we record,
we every still manage to screw stuff. I love it.
That's really it. The biggest thing is it's a played out word. It's unfortunate. I don't have a better word for it. I don't think you do either. And apparently, our culture doesn't have a great word for it yet. So we're stuck with leadership, even though it's played out. It's okay if you're, you know, a follower, because we need those too. I'm a follower. Like, yes, I happen to fall into a leadership role, a leadership position, or if it's something that I'm familiar with, sure. I'm a leader in that arena or whatever it is. Other than that, man, like, there's something to be said for being a good follower.
Yeah.
Just working, getting your hands dirty and getting in it, you know?
When is buddy breathing the easiest? When you have a partner that's just shoving that snorkel at you, that all they care about is getting the snorkel back. Imagine being on a team where everybody cares more about you getting the snorkel than them, like, themselves. That team is going to be great. And not everybody, like, nobody's in that case being a leader. Somebody might have to step up and go, hey, I want to go do this thing. I need you guys' help. And you're like, okay, cool. You look for work and make it happen. But that's when times are the best, or when people are trying to get you the snorkel at all times and making sure that you have what you need. That's a pretty good place to be. So
that's actually a really good analogy, that being that buddy and almost serving that other person is like, hey man, that's just, I'm good. I don't need a breath right now. I mean, I do need a breath, but like, I'm more worried about you right now. And so, man, between you guys just hammering that thing back and forth, that's huge. Yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that.
I will never talk crap about buddy breathing or any other WaterCon event lest I get called out on it. So I'm not going to do that. But I will say that, you know, there was a moment that I started becoming very good at buddy breathing, to the point where it became a confidence thing, where to swimming into buddy breathing during my time at NDOC. No kidding, I got to a point kind of like 3 weeks in, so about halfway through. And all the way through that, I would swim into buddy breathing and be like, I am undefeated at buddy breathing. You're not going to be able to beat me. And I would be thinking that in my head about the instructor and about my, like, it didn't matter who my partner was. I just got into this habit of just, no, you're not going to beat me. And I did go for a little bit undefeated in buddy breathing, where I walked in and I, like, my partner might fail that day, or we would pass. And like, it became a thing that became a confidence thing, almost like a fight. Anyway, point being, the day that it flipped for me is the day that I was like, all right, I'm going to try this. I'm just going to try to, you know, if anybody pops, it's going to be me, because I'm going to pass out, but I'm going to try to get the snorkel to my buddy. And it worked like that first day. And then I noticed it was working all the time. It was just every single time. Like, if I just pass him the snorkel, it immediately made the other dude more calm. Like, doing the fake thing where you pass it right back, that's always a big move. Like, oh, I don't even need to take this breath here, I'm just going to give that back. That's the move right there. Cause then your partner's like, oh yeah, let's go.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that probably plays into a much larger thing, as it is that mentality shift across the board, whether it's buddy breathing or something else, is instead of, and I think you say this, don't let it happen to you, or you're allowing it to happen to you instead of you happening to it.
Yeah.
There is for sure a mind shift there that happens. And you're right. It's a confidence thing. Is, man, no longer am I just making it through. Am I just surviving? Like, Yeah. And no, I am.
It requires a bit of delusion. I will say that. Is it, you got to just be like, I'm going to go impose my absolute will onto this scenario. Like, I am going to make this happen. You know what I mean? Like, once you shift it to that, you feel like you're more active in the process. Things aren't happening to you. They're happening because of you. And if they're happening because of you, then you can change the outcome by changing what it is that you're doing.
But you are, because you're feeding that person the snorkel. And I know we're using buddy breathing, but, you know, some people struggle with it. Some people don't, you know, it's just like ditching on. Some people struggle with it. Some people don't. Ditching on was never an issue for me. Buddy breathing wasn't bad. I had my own, like, anything with distance, you know, going underwater distance,
right?
That always, I struggled with.
Pretty disrespectful, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, Yeah, rucking, you know, rucking, running,
right,
underwaters,
right.
You know, a 50 meter for you, maybe a lot more for me. I don't know.
Exactly, yeah, it's definitely more strokes. I'll tell you that much. Yeah. Oh, it is definitely more strokes. I will tell you, there was a My favorite guy, speaking of 50, there was one crow that I worked for, and I won't even say his name. I'll use my fill-in fake name of Mike. Mike was a crow. I don't think Mike ever physically completed a 50-meter underwater. That dude would pass. I mean, he was one of the most in-shape guys I've ever seen. An amazing leader, a great dude, a great family man. So many good things to say about him. But he'd get to be about 45 meters, and you could tell, like, he was not of this world. And it didn't matter if he was doing it fresh. It didn't matter if he was doing it, you know, during a training day. He would just kind of go limp, and, like, it was your job as a safety man to pick him up, because as soon as he hit out of the water, he would just give the okay, like a boss, and the instructors would be like, oh, yeah. Like, he touched me, like, oh, yeah, he's fine. Yeah, the safety man would be, like, right over top, just shielding him in a little bit.
Wait, he's good. He'll knock out the first 35.
No, he's
we'll
fine.
Only start right at 40, we'll start following him. Dude,
that's it. And you're just like, oh, man. I'm not saying, like, and I was always a safety man because I was the NCOIC of the team, so I would sit next, or, you know, close to it. I was one of the NCS. And I would sit next to him, you know, in the middle of the pool, and we would get ready to go. So I was always a safety man, too, as we counted off. So,
oh, man.
It was awesome. Yeah, but I will say, and it's funny that we kind of have a tangent in that, but he was one of the best leaders that I, you know, ever worked for. Like, that guy was an Ironman athlete, like a no kidding, the Ironman triathlon. He was a multiple time finisher. He would never tell you that. He wasn't a physically imposing guy, but he would outdo you at everything, to include work ethic.
Jeez.
He was just one of those dudes that really would listen to problems, really put, like, the human aspect of it there first. And a graduated commander, too, by the way, of, like, a very small niche special operations unit. So he ended up coming over and crushing it on our indoc. But that guy, all the things that we talked about, you know, he was transparent. He never aggrandized himself. He never made the decision about him. He wasn't afraid to kind of tell you, hey, I'm making this call as the commander, and you might not get it, but this is the call we're going to make. We're going to go forward. And you'd be like, okay. You know, he explained it as best he could. He very rarely had to yell at anybody, because that was my job. another great officer that I didn't have to be every leader. I can find the role where I'm supposed to, you know, jump in and provide value where I can. But that was another great leader that you know, I didn't have to be the leader. And sometimes there's freedom in that. So when we say everybody's a leader and we force leadership down everybody's throat for everything all the time, it does sort of get diluted, because that's what you do. You know, when everybody does it, it's not a thing we focus on very well.
No. And that's, I think I know who you're talking about, but I'm not exactly sure if, you know, obviously we'll keep his name out of it, but
yeah.
Those kind of people are important and also frustrating to be around, because you're like, just get something wrong.
Let me be, like, right.
Are you Man. Human? Are right. you yeah. human?
Yeah.
You know, and the secret is yes, they are human. They do mess up. They are just able to, you're just not seeing it. Like, they struggle in they're struggling in other locations of their life, not necessarily what you're seeing on the surface. And there's something to be said for compartmentalization. You know, I know that we're not supposed to compartmentalize, but fuck that. there are
mental health advice.
Yeah. Not mental health advice for anybody, but there are times where you need to compartmentalize, because if you don't, if you allow your emotions or you allow something else to free flow out into everything, then now you're impacting other people, and now you can't have that even keel or that consistent reaction to anything.
Yeah,
because now I'm emotionally charged and I'm reacting to everything. It's not great.
No, not a good time to be there.
No,
wouldn't recommend it. Well, that feels like a good place to end there, Chief.
Oh, wow. We went there, huh? Okay, cool. Well, before we do that, let's please check out Kevin Edgerton, LT18 Alpha Fitness. Get yourself a plan. I know that Christmas has already passed, but that's okay, because you folks that are out there in high school or college are coming up on your last 6 months before the summer. Like, now's the time. You've got a clock there, you know, whether it's June, July, August, September, you know when you're going to ship about, and time to get ready. So make sure you're hitting your dev sessions, but also check out Kevin Edgerton at 18alphafitness.com. Use the promo code 1 ready, the number one and ready, get yourself a training plan. It's tailored to you, your current fitness level, the fitness level that you need to be at, and the timeline that's associated with it. And he will get you where you need to be.
I thought you were going to say summer, because summer bods. You can also buy the program for summer bods. Get that kettlebell for BJJ. That thing will get you looking right by the time summer comes up. Get you some Hoochie Daddy shorts.
I may need to dive in on some of that, because this dad bod is strong right now.
Fantastic.
There's a reason why this camera stops right here.
Right at chest line? Perfect. I got a strict collarbone rule for my headshot. Have that edited out.
Yeah, when we were recording ATM, I'm just sucked in the entire time. I'm sitting on the couch, just sucked in. Yeah, this is great.
Well, go check out our channel too while you're over there. Check out onesready.com. You can find us everywhere we are. Download us wherever you get your podcast. Leave a review, leave a like, just absolutely caress and take that subscribe bell out for a dinner. And then at the end, hit the subscribe bell. Okay? That'd be great. Subscribers would be sweet. A lot of you listen and don't subscribe. It's free.
Take the subscribe button out to dinner and then make sure you call her back.
And then never call her again. Dorothy Mantooth is a saint. How dare you? I'm going to take her out to a nice steak dinner.
We watch that.
We got to go. Thanks for following along, everybody.
I'm dying over here.
Peaches is dying over here. We'll talk to you next time. Everybody train hard.
Later.